Welcome to Pete and Hannah's Watchlist. I'm your host, Pete Mitchell. I'm here with my great co-host, Hannah.
Hello, people.
Hannah, we're here today for AFI Top 100 10 Year Revisited.
That's right.
But before we begin, let us tell the viewers and the listeners what they should do.
Could you pretty please leave a like and subscribe to the channel?
Subscribe.
Leave a comment down below your feedback on this show, thoughts, feelings, criticisms, all that jazz.
Hit the notification button and you'll get great content like this one, including AFI Top 100. You're watching that right now. You're listening it. What's next? Good show this week.
Movies.
Not a great show. Good show.
Movies.
Maria.
Baby girl. Companion.
Yeah. Mm. And movie news. And, some clickbait in there.
Yeah, hoo ha ha wah.
Previews of movies.
That's right.
And reviews and previews all around.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah, on today's show, we have King Kong.
Whoa.
Movie number 41. And it's the 1933 version. It's the only one on the list.
Yes.
And it was released on March 2nd, 1933. And RKO Studios was the studio. And Hannah, we have our own digital copy.
Yeah.
This is the first time you've watched it.
Yes.
But you have seen the other ones?
I've probably seen the Peter Jackson one.
Yep.
And then the most recent Kong films.
Yes, we can go into that. Hannah.
Yeah.
RKO films we've talked about before were Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, and this was the other property that we brought up at the time was their big success.
Yeah, it was their moneymaker. It was the monkey and then the dancers. That's it.
This movie goes for an hour and 47 minutes.
Mm, yep.
And had a budget of $630,000. Marion C. Cooper, he was the director/producer of this film. He came up with the idea for this movie. And you know how he came up with the idea for this movie?
Please tell.
He had a dream that a monkey was attacking New York City.
I mean, don't we all have those dreams?
So how he started the movie, he said his vision was King Kong, but he didn't call it King Kong. He just called it a monkey. Biggest monkey in the world. On top of the building, getting shot down by a plane. That was it.
He just worked back from there. He just had to get there. And you know what? I love that. You have an idea and you just need to work to it. I love it. That's actually how most of these movies should go.
So when filming commenced, it had no screenplay.
Of course.
Cooper hired Edgar Wallace, who had like a bit of clout at the time.
Mm.
And he had a rough draft ready by January 32, but died a month later. James Creel picked up the work of the screenplay, but found it too difficult to meet Cooper's plot demands. Of course. On top of the building.
Yeah.
Though he incorporated his request, the dialogue proved to be too extensive. So he hired Ruth Rose, who had never written a screenplay before, to revise the script, and she rewrote the majority of the dialogue. Upon the film's release, Wallace was credited as a screenplay writer because Cooper had promised him he'd get credit. The studio also saw it as an opportunity to gain positive publicity because Wallace was a well-established writer.
Of course. Okay.
Okay, so all
right,
the King Kong producer, Ernest B. Schoenstack, was a good friend of Cooper, who was making the movie.
Yep.
And they had early experience on making monkey movies. And they did a movie called Chang, A Drama of Wilderness, and Rango. Both were prominently featured monkeys, authentic jungle setting. And there was this hoax documentary called Inagi and was advertised in the film as an authentic, incestible celluloid document showing the sacrifice of a living woman hanging out with...
the monkeys.
Monkeys.
Kind of like Jane Goodall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This film was an immediate success and it grossed $4 million. So then off the back, they came up with the idea, Cooper's idea, and he influenced King Kong.
Oh, of course. Okay.
So basically how he got the green light was a gorillas plus a sexy woman in peril.
I'm like...
profits.
That's... you know what? That is exactly correct.
Okay, so...
these sound like very smart businessmen.
So Cooper had the idea to create the film about the gorillas, which was inspired by his friend... Douglas Burden, and he considered filming in the jungle of Komodo. He had read Burden's the dragon lizards of Kamadu, and he was convinced that was the idea. But the stock market crash happened. They decided it was going to be filmed.
Ooh.
Yeah. They were doing a film at the time, and it was called The Most Dangerous Game.
Which, one, the hunting of men.
Yes. So they had the similar sets, so they used the backed up on sets.
Love that.
Ray, the actor that was in this movie, played Bruce Cabot, Josh Schussler, that wasn't supposed to be him. It was supposed to be the same actor that played in Sullivan's Travels. He was supposed to be the actor, but he wanted more money after doing Dangerous Game. He thought he deserved more money.
Because that was cool.
Yeah, and then they end up getting Bruce Cabot.
No.
Yeah, so Jean Harlow was supposed to be the original.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, she was supposed to be Anne, the character of Anne, but end up going to Faye Ray because Jean Harlow didn't want to do it.
Yeah, of course.
She just didn't get it.
She didn't. You don't get Giant Monkey Takeover New York.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, directed by Cooper and Schoenstock. Mm. Screenplay was Krillman and Ruth Rose. Story by Edgar Wallace and Miriam Cooper.
Yep.
Produced by Cooper and Schoenstock. Stars Faye Ray, Robert Armstrong, Bruce Cabot.
Mm.
Cinematography was done by Vernal Walker and General Taylor.
Mm.
Edited by Ted Cheeseman. Music. Yep. Which is fantastic music, by the way.
Of course.
Max Steiner, there was sort of like, this was credited for using the big score, but some people say there was movies just before this that should be credited for it.
Oh, of course.
There was
okay.
a huge score for this movie. It got released in Radio City Musical, which is 10,000 people can get there. And so, let's talk about some of the actors in this movie.
Mm.
Faye Ray, she was... She did Most Dangerous Game. She did this. She was a big star. Then she did a few. She kept doing movie after movie after movie. Gave up. Ended up going broke. Ended up having to go back into the movies. And she worked right up until the 80s. She ended up... she retired. And she was doing telly movies and stuff like that. And she like did Perry Mason shows and stuff like that. But in 1997, James Cameron came to her and said, Faye, I would like you to play... The old lady in Titanic.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
And she turned it down. Gloria Stewart ended up getting the role, and she got nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, well, I understand, but she was like, nah, don't want to do it. She made the right decision. She doesn't need to be a part of that.
She ended up getting paid $10,000, and she ended up making this movie, and was the biggest success of her career.
Probably, yeah.
Bruce
Cabot,
so he ended up doing heaps of movies. He was like a... Character actor did like a James Bond movie, Diamonds Are Forever. He did Green Beret.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Some of the other actors in this, the one of the native chief who was played by Noble Johnson.
Yeah.
He ended up doing like Moby Dick, The Mummy, another like you know the monster movies.
Yeah, those monster movies. Yeah.
So he's in a lot of those as well. So the reaction to the film at the time, it made a box office of $5.3 million after it like going through the. Multiple different things, but this is how this movie started, right? It debuted in New York City in the Roxy and Radio City Musical simultaneously. Both had seating capacity of $10,000. It sold out for every performance.
Really?
For 10 performances per day.
Really?
Yeah.
That's...
Unbelievable.
That's unbelievable. That's...
The critics love this movie. They were...
The critics love this movie?
Yeah.
At the time? Said, really?
Yeah, they said... No more thrilling climax ever filmed. That was Motion Picture Herald, released by an imaginative stunning, and it was praised for the build-up of suspense, dubbing it the showman's picture. A review of the Hollywood Reporter bears all the earmarks of a winner. Plenty of Money, another review in the same periodical, declared it was superbly produced, acted, a great piece of imagination, hatched in the brain of a showman... For showmen. The periodical included multi-page booklet in its March issue featuring production stills, concept sketches, and it was just a huge critical praise. Even the New York Times gave it an enthusiastic account for the plot throughout the film as a fascinating fantastic adventure film. John Mosher of The New Yorker called it ridiculous, but wrote that many scenes of this picture was certainly one of the best of the screen thrillers. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
He's not wrong.
Yeah. Didn't get any Oscar love.
No. Whatsoever. Strange.
Let's go to the Oscar for that year. It was the fifth time that the Oscars had. A lot of the categories were only three nominees. The Champ ended up winning Best Actor.
Uh-huh.
Helen Hayes for Sin of Madeline Claudette. She won. A Bad Girl, Frank Borans, won directing. Outstanding production went to the Grand Hotel.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I have seen that film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The writing went to The Champ, and adaptation went to Bad Girl.
Mm. So
there you go. Of that year, it was the third highest grossing movie. Yeah, you had Dinner at 8 was number 10. 42nd Street for Warner Brothers was at 9. Dancing Lady for MGM. Parade for Warner Brothers. Tugboat Annie for MGM. The Bowery for Universal. She Did Him Wrong for Paramount. I Am No Angel for Paramount, and Roman Scandals for United Artists. That were the highest grossing movies of that day.
Strange. Yeah.
Recently, the movie has a Rotten Tomatoes 97, Letterboxd 3.9, and IMDb 7.9.
Yep.
Heaps of criticism recently of this movie. In the 20th, really? Yep, in the 19th and 20th century, people of African descendants were commonly misrepresented visually and a metaphor for racist stereotypes.
Yep.
The story of Beauty and the Beast, many film scholars have argued that it was a cautionary tale about interracial romance.
I didn't pick up on that, but I will say the iconology of the tribe and stuff is, yeah, using monkeys and, it doesn't play well nowadays. And it shouldn't have played well, but...
So Cooper and Trevor still rejected any of these claims. Cooper explained the deeper meaning of the film. The inspiration for the climax scene came as he was leaving his office in Manhattan. He heard the sound of an aeroplane motor. He reflectively looked up as the sun glinted off the wings of the plane, extremely close to the tallest building. He realized that he placed a giant grill at the top of the tallest building, had it shot down with the most modernized weapons of the air. Armed airplane, he would have a story of primitive doom by modern civilization. I don't know if he just made that up, but this guy sounds like a bit of, like, you know...
A showman. Yeah. Like a Barnum.
Barnum, yeah.
Yeah.
P.T. Barnum, yeah.
A P.T. Barnum type. Which, you know what? When you're making movies about giant monkeys, you need that kind of guy. You need that showman.
The Independent stated that this film may look a little foolish to us, not to mention racist, sexist, and shall we say symbolic and naive, but it still packed a visual wallop. While Ryan Britt felt that critics were willing to overlook this film's problematic aspects just as unattractive byproducts of the era, that meta-fictional excuse for cultural insensitive. Some say in 2013 it was titled 11 of the most racist films ever made, and this made the list. Described the film's native as subhuman or primate, ever distinctive way of communicating. The article also brought up the racial allegory between Kong and black men, particularly as Kong meets his demise due to the ancestral desire for a white woman.
Wow.
There's a lot of people reading a lot of stuff into it. Maybe he's just like, you know,
maybe a guy just thought about a giant ape attacking the city, and he's like, I need to somehow wove a human story in this.
Yeah, so, yeah. So
he came up with the Beauty and the Beast genre.
1976, this movie was remade with Jessica Lange and Jeff Bridges. And in 2005, Peter Jackson remade this movie with Jack Black and Naomi Watts. At the time, the 76 version, there was some fights in the courts about who actually owned the rights to this movie. Now, Cooper, who came up with the idea, he sold to RKO two pictures, King Kong and Son of King Kong, which was made the same year, right?
Crazy. Now,
he thought he got the rights back, but then there was rumors going around that RKO were trying to make a remake of this picture in 1950. Then they were trying to sell the rights to a Japanese creator for King Kong vs. Godzilla. So, he took them to court. he then, Universal was trying to get the rights, because then it turned out, the judge said that actually the idea for King Kong was in public domain, and so as long as you didn't infringe on the first movie, you can make whatever you wanted with King Kong. But then another judge, just around this time when the new movie came out for Universal, I'm sorry, Jessica Lange and Jeff Bridges,
yeah,
he came up with, he said that actually Cooper had the idea, so you need to pay him. The Cooper's estate, which was his son at the time, Universal paid for the rights, and so now Universal held the rights, and now Legendary Pictures hold the rights for King Kong, So yeah, it just goes to show that even back then, creative, you know, fighting for their rights or things like that, he thought he actually had the, and like a lot of times, creatives do think they have the rights, but they sign things away.
Yeah.
But this time it turned out, there was actually like a law called the Cooper Law.
Just in case.
Just about intellectual property.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. You know,
Every Thursday on Movie News, we do a segment called Clickbait, which is the hottest of hot takes. And last week, we did our 2025 movie draft, where we selected our movies that we want to be successful.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Little bets out.
We hope.
And Wicked, when it comes out in 4K. And so, hottie hot take for King Kong, Hannah?
My hottie hot take is the reason I think this movie works and modern disaster movies don't work is humanity's naivety. So nowadays, in the like Kong, Godzilla movies and the Transformer movies, like these big giant robots or monsters come in to destroy the city or whatever, right? When you're playing with the human element, it's usually very annoying and stupid. Like humans are making stupid actions based off like a giant monster attacking. But when you're watching this version of King Kong, and they're just like, no, we're just going to show him off to the masses. It's so cool. It's a giant monkey. The naivety adds, like, they've never, like, it's, there's something unique about it. I think we've lost, like, a lot of those monster movies have lost that nowadays, because we just find them, we find that it's so stupid to think, you know, if a giant monster's attacking, you know, you need to help save it, when it's like, you know, like Godzilla is resting in the Colosseum. They're just allowing a giant lizard monster, not doing anything about it, and allowing it to rest in the Colosseum. And it's stupid. But if you go back in the 1930s, if I saw that, it's like playful naivety. Like, yeah. It's funny.
Yeah.
I found this movie quite hilarious in the sense that I can completely believe that these people would do this. I cannot believe someone would do it now.
Yeah.
Like showing off monster to, like, as a show, pet.
Yep.
I can believe it in 1930.
And yeah, well, the people back then would have, yeah.
I believe it, and I think that's why I think this movie works, and modern monster movies don't tend to work, because they play on this human element that's usually very stupid, rather naive, because humans should be more evolved. We've come far enough that you shouldn't be making...
Have we?
Yeah, but you could...
I think another thing that makes this movie work is it's not a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. Like, we're getting, like, the original version of this movie.
Of, yes, and, of the
and
idea.
And makes it huge. It's like, you know, Superman and Batman. They were the originals of...
When they first came out?
Yeah, they were the originals of comic book movies. You know, when we first saw Iron Man, that was great. But now we're seeing
the copy.
We're getting multiverses. People are sort of like going back from that. And like, people still like King Kong movies, but it doesn't hit.
Yeah, they don't hit. And I think it's the human element, because I feel like we've lost the naivety.
And you know another thing that I think makes this movie work?
What?
It's the black and white nature of it as well. I think the black
and white... It's like giving that period piece vibe.
Yeah, like the black and white actually
found footage of a monkey attacking New York.
I just think it just makes it work. It like, a lot of this film, when people first saw it, it was before the censorship came in. So it was really graphic. And so it needed to be black and white because of the...
Yeah, there's not blood and...
But this movie got cut, and then the version that we got to saw was like sort of the restoration version, where a lot of scenes were sort of put back in. But I find my clickbait is, I think the black and white makes this movie pop.
Yeah.
I just really think I'm like, if you had this in colour, it doesn't...
Well, we've seen this version in colour.
Yeah. For me...
It was Peter Jackson.
We saw it in 1976 as well.
I don't know
if it's because it's a copy of the copy or... But I just think this movie pops a lot more with being in black and white.
Yeah, it's that vintage...
Yeah.
Like, this is the original...
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, text. Yeah. Like, I'm getting it from here. It's my first edition of King Kong. Here we go.
Yeah.
No, I see that. And that's where I'm saying...
the hardback version, it's not the paperback
version. Yeah, you're going... Yeah, the first edition copy where, it's in black and white. People are stupid enough to play around with giant monkeys and not care about dinosaurs at all.
I think you're right about the naivety of human beings and stuff like that. But we've gone through world wars and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think we're coming back around. Like, people would believe this now.
Yeah, but it's more of stupidity rather than naivety. Because we've gone through so much that at this point, if you're making... Like, if you see a dinosaur and you overshadow, I don't care about a dinosaur, I care about the giant monkey, you're like, God, there's dinosaurs and giant monkey on the same plane. You would, like, these guys brush off dinosaurs because they're so invested in this monkey.
Well, they probably didn't even know what a dinosaur was.
Yeah, they talk about it. They don't even know what dinosaur they were looking at. It's like, well, we get Jurassic Park. And that's just it. There's a naivety in Jurassic Park that's not in the later Jurassic Park films. There's stupidity in those ones because they talk about making dinosaurs scarier because that's what the people want.
Yeah.
And that's where we've lost it. It's the naivety of like, I can make dinosaurs happen. That's so cool. And now it's like, why are you making dinosaurs scarier?
I don't think it was the naivety for Jurassic Park. The wonder of like...
But wonder and naivety go hand in hand because a dinosaur that eats people... fruition.
That is an element, but what made Jurassic Park work was the fact that it's the wonderment.
I mean,
God, like, can you believe they brought dinosaurs to life? That is unbelievable.
That's the same as they brought a giant monkey to life in this one.
No.
Oh, yeah, you meant the creation of such things.
Yeah, so the monkey was an imagination thing. The dinosaurs, they're real dinosaurs, and they created... bring dinosaurs. So I'm saying from a character point of view in
you're Jurassic like Park, the wonderment.
Yeah, the wonderment in the character. Yeah, we know that for sure, you know, that was never going to work out because dinosaurs kill. That was never going to work out. And the monkey in this movie, we always knew it was going to break free. I think the wonderment from the monkey, the King Kong thing, and think... Once you've seen it over and over and over again, the wonder sort of dissipates.
But that's the thing. That recently, the best interpretation we've seen, at least my favorite, and maybe yours as well, is Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
Deals with the whole monster idea, but it turns it into a post-war movie dealing with the after effects. PTSD.
But I'll tell you why these movies do work and we can get copies of copies. When a kid first sees a Godzilla movie or a kid first sees a King Kong movie or a Jurassic Park movie, they go, unbelievable. The things that I learned in textbooks are actually real. And so, like, even though they're not real, they're just on the screen. That's why you can reprint these over and over
again. Yeah, and also...
And that's the same with comic book movies. Like, the people that have seen the iterations of 1977 Superman, 1990 Batman, 2008... Iron Man, but they've seen the first gen thing of that, so they're going to have that in their heart as so the copy is going to be where. But the kid that's seeing Iron Man for the first time or seeing Batman seeing King Kong for the first time, that's their King Kong. That's their Batman.
I understand that. That's like Star Wars. Each generation has a Star Wars. And I also will say that the reason they keep making these movies. It's still fun to watch a giant monkey punch a dinosaur.
And they're still successful.
I still 100%. Enjoy watching that.
And I just think if you like any of those old, like those movies, those new movies, you should go back and see the original. Because like the heart of the movies.
Yeah.
And it's not as great animatronics and all that stuff like that. This is stopgap animation.
Yeah, stop motion.
They did also
so incredible
big heads. They did huge hands, all those things like that. So there was, you know, like they had an 18-foot high head. You know, so things like that.
I
like,
know. Yeah, there was
A rumor going around that they had people dressed up as a monkey. That's not true. The producer said that definitely didn't happen. There was definitely stopgap animation and also like. Big paws and stuff like that. So let's get on to scene breakdown.
Yeah.
And let's get on to Pete and Hannah's review. So the journey begins because we're making an outdoor picture. So I just love these, like,
how
to make a movie.
The beginning of this movie was my favorite part of this movie. Just a guy with an eye, like, he's like, you immediately are introduced to this director and people don't want to work with him because he puts people in danger. He makes adventure in the jungle movies.
So I think like Cooper, the director of this movie, this guy that came up with the story, Carl Denneman's is him.
Put himself in there.
Yeah. Because this guy like comes out with some absolute pearls of lines and stuff like that.
100%.
He's like, no one wants to star in this movie, aka Gene Harlan never wants to star in this movie. So he just goes pick a random person off the street. He just goes to a movie that's already been filming in the sort of, same studio, and just picks her up and says, okay, you're hired.
Yeah, he,
You're in.
And that's, in this movie, he literally goes to the streets, finds a woman starving.
Yeah. And it's a bonus. She's pretty.
She's pretty and starving, so she needs the money. So she'll
then,
do anything.
And then you go, like, the line is, there's not many people with your looks out here.
Yeah. It's just, wow.
So then we meet, like, we go to the boat, and then we meet the... Bruce Cabot, his character, John Jack Driscoll.
Yeah, the captain, yeah.
We meet Captain Eaglehorn.
Yep.
And Charles Weston. So these are the main sort of characters that we see throughout the film. They go on the boat, and then Driscoll goes to Anne. You know, there's no place for a girl like you.
Yeah, he accidentally knocks her in. They are off on the wrong foot, but she's still being all nice. She's just like, you know.
And like, Carl Denham just will not let go of, this is Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast.
No, he's got something. He keeps all his cards to his chest. Yeah, he doesn't like telling them.
They don't know
where they're going.
Yeah, they don't know where they're going. But also, he doesn't know there's a big monkey here. He just thinks it's a...
No, but he's planned...
He thinks it's a jungle.
He has planned with gas bombs.
Yeah.
He has planned... Like, he knows something's here because he's heard of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he hears... He heard the tale.
An 80-foot monkey.
He heard the tale of Kong, and he's like, I got something. I've got an idea.
So the production starts, and they're just doing some...
shots on the boat.
The fog comes in. Well, that is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I love a good fog.
Yeah.
I love a good fog.
And Jack are kind of like, you know.
Yeah, they're starting to like, you know, feel each other out.
He's like protective of her.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's starting to fall for her. And it's just, she's a pretty girl on a boat.
They arrive at the island. There's a huge wall. Now, this is from the movie that I was telling you about.
Yep, Dangerous.
Yep, Most Dangerous Game.
Yep.
So they already had created this. So this is just like money for GM. Okay,
these studios, MGM, is very famous for just repurposing sets and costumes for different movies.
So they're hearing the voices. They find people. They're chanting Kong. Now, at the time, there was like had a lot of different names for this movie. And before David Selznick, so the movie was nicknamed Kong. Before David Selznick left RKO Studios, his last note to the guys was, call it King Kong.
Wow.
And it worked.
Whoa.
So sometimes like it just takes a little note.
Yeah.
You know, like, it, you know, sometimes you don't get the right name because you don't get that note. And
someone just had that in the back pocket. Yeah.
So you get the the tribe are really scared. And so
they look like they're sacrificing someone.
Yeah, they're getting ready to. And yeah, so yeah. They're sort of seeing sort of like a... They're sort of filming.
Oh, it's so funny because they're trying to hide before they try to see it. And he's like, nah, I got to get a shot of this.
Yeah,
so,
and he's making a huge sound with the reel-to-reel.
He gets the camera right out.
And so, yeah, so they get interrupted and they go, oh, you know. So they sort of, the tribes people, come up with a plan they're going to take.
Yeah, because they want Anne. She's a golden woman, know. She's it.
Something different. You
know? Yeah, Kong would love that. Yeah.
So they go back to the boat. Driscoll and Anne are making out. Then Driscoll gets caught.
Yeah, they've officially said they want to be together. Yeah. Basically,
and then Anne gets kidnapped and gets offered as a sacrifice to Kong. So she gets tied up in one of the most famous scenes.
Oh yeah.
And then draws Kong out, and then Kong arrives to take Anne. Now, this is where you get... There's a lot of things that are happening here that a lot of people didn't get to see. But Kong is, like, eating people. He's stepping on people.
Yeah. He's nuts.
He's ripping clothes off Anne. He's doing all these things. And that were, like, things that were censored.
Yeah.
There was the next scene where you get the Stegosaurus. The boys take on a Stegosaurus. They've got like full-on guns, and they're going.
They're hunting. They're hunting down.
Yeah, because the boys trying to get Ant back. Yeah. So King Kong is going sort of back to his lair.
With Ant.
So he's like put Ant up, and he's fighting the boys with like tree trunks.
Yeah, they're stuck on a trunk, and
he's twisting
them.
So
like it's Wipeout or something.
In the first ever take, and they actually lost this when they cut it out for censorship.
Yeah.
There was four guys. They fall off the tree.
Yeah.
They go to their death and they get eaten by a giant spider.
Thank God we lost that.
When they showed the movie in San Francisco test screening, they all said you have to get rid of that scene because the movie just stopped there. It was so scary.
It was
so scary. You have to get rid of that scene. You couldn't go back into the thinking Kong and all this stuff like that. It was so scary to see that the giant spiders actually eating human beings.
Sorry, I just got the shivers, guys. That sucks. No, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. So Anne's up on the thing. They're trying to get her back. But then the big guy comes.
Oh my God, a T-Rex.
T-Rex. Like, imagine seeing this movie. You probably
for the first time.
Bones. You haven't even seen the picture books of like,
The dinosaurs are still like a fresh idea.
1933, and you go, oh my God, you've seen a museum with some bones in a museum. You've never seen an actual T-Rex go hard.
Hard against a giant monkey.
Kong and Rex just go really
hard. They go toe-to-toe, and it's a good fight, actually, for what, like, you can criticize. Like, it's weird to criticize it because at the time, that would have been groundbreaking. And even now, when you look at it,
it's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
Stop motion, we rarely get to see it nowadays.
Yeah.
And I love, it's probably my favorite version of animation. I love seeing it.
Him taking on a T-Rex, which he beats. He takes on a serpent, he beats that.
Yep.
He takes on a pterodactyl.
No, he's cool. He's a cool guy.
At the time where he's taking on a pterodactyl, Driscoll goes to get Anne. And the scene with Driscoll, where he's hiding underneath branches, and is really good. Like, you...
Oh, he's like...
There's a guy climbing. There's like a, you know, and then they get cut that off, and he's sort of like knifing the Kong, King Kong with Kong, the arm. That's Kong. Really, like, good suspense there.
It's actually really good.
It is really good.
Yeah, I don't get that a lot of the time with recent movies when a character's hiding from the monster. It's very rare. But in this, I was like, oh.
So then they come back to the boat, and then, like, this Denham, he's just really, as you said before, he's really prepared for anything here. He bombs Kong.
Yeah.
And they get Anne back. They bomb him with gas, and they say, we're gonna float him back to New York. We're going to chain him up. And everyone's saying, this is a dumb idea. You cannot chain this guy up.
Yeah.
He floats him back by chains. And, boys, we're going to make so much money, we're going to all split it.
Guys, this is going to be the eighth wonder of the world.
Eighth wonder of the world, guys. This is the eighth wonder of the world. He's
The captain of the boat goes, no, this guy is going to, you know, he goes, he's been king of this world, but we're going to teach him fear. We're going to be rich boys. This is denim. This is
what I love about this movie.
So he's charging $20 a ticket. Like,
expensive.
Back then, that is huge.
That's cost. Expensive.
He's getting all these people to watch it. Just all they're doing is a gorilla chained up with a girl there, dressed up.
They're going to tell the story of how they got Kong.
And so he's getting up and just like, you know.
And Anne has trauma.
Yeah.
She does not like seeing him.
Everyone's saying, oh, because Dan's trying to tell the story of like a love story between Driscoll and Anne. But Driscoll's trying to deflect it. He goes, no, actually, Denim was the one that,
he got the monkey.
So the press come to take photos of Kong. They sort of set him off with the flashbulbs.
And then his woman is right there on stage, in the arms of another guy. Yeah. Like, he's jealous, he's upset, he's angry. The guy's going to go.
So he starts roaring at it, and the crowd just go nuts. Kong breaks the chains, breaks free, starts eating people.
Oh, yeah.
He just goes straight.
He gets out of there.
Probably hasn't had a snack for a while. He needs to get it done.
Yeah, well, he didn't
eat. He's got to eat sustenance.
He didn't eat his sacrifice.
Yeah.
So.
Kong knows the difference between the ladies. So Kong is searching for Anne.
Yeah, he climbs up.
Anne's in their own apartment building, climbing up. He knocks Driscoll out pretty quickly. And then you see the arm in here. So with the scenes with Anne in Kong's hand, the hand is attached to a crane and raised 10 feet in the air. First, there's a technician that put her in the hand and closed his fingers around it, but the hand was lifted for filming. So she would say she'd be in terror in these scenes for real because she struggled, and the looser the hand grip, the felt she was about to fall.
Oh.
And so she was
That would be scary.
And so she had to signal Cooper to stop filming when she got close.
To falling.
So he picks her out. They end up going to Empire State Building. Like, the Empire State Building. Is the Empire State Building...
Does it become iconic because of this movie?
Yes. It does, doesn't it?
Because I don't think...
And it wasn't the tallest building in the world. There's buildings in Chicago that make taller.
The next time this building becomes famous is like A Fair to Remember. In A Fair to Remember, they don't actually make it to the building. If you've never seen it.
Yeah, like, so movies make the Empire State Building as iconic as it is.
Yeah, because I can't think of King Kong when I think of, the Empire. So it's,
So Kong's worried for Anne. He puts it down and he's sort of like...
Trying to
swat the plane away. Plane shoots him, goes around.
Yeah,
shoots him again.
I love that they come up with the idea, oh, let's use planes. Like, they just immediately just thought of that.
Yeah. So then Kong's on the ground. Denim walks in and goes, oh, this is the guy that captured Kong.
Kong got shot, by the way. Now
we know Kong can get defeated by airplane. And then Denim goes, no, he wasn't defeated by airplane. The beast was defeated by beauty.
Beauty killed the beast.
This guy.
Can I say also in this movie that I have seen also in recent movies as well, is Kong is so given so much expression as the monkey. And in this movie, you feel sympathy for some reason towards the giant monkey attacking. And I think it just, I don't know why we gave him such, you know, facial movements, but you sympathize. Like, he was just trying to protect his lady, and he got shot, and it hurt. And, I felt for the guy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have.
Yeah, well, it was...
He was a terror. Water, wasn't he? Yeah. Well, yeah, they took him.
He was fish out of water.
They took him.
Yeah, when you take fish out of water, they didn't do anything they want.
True. It's true.
I shouldn't have taken him from his island.
Yeah, but then you don't pick up another woman and then drop her into the streets.
Well, she passed away. But, it wasn't the greatest time.
He was like, that ain't my woman. I don't like that woman.
You would have survived.
but I'm not the one going, No.
You would have survived. Reasons to see this?
This is like, you made it also very aware, like, this is the first edition of the monster movie. Love that genre.
I love this one.
Thriller, the disaster movie genre.
You get
genre.
The mummy, you get the invisible man.
You get that from this.
You get Godzilla.
You know, this is like, perfect.
Like, the Godzilla came perfectly after
journalism.
It came perfectly after the nuclear war. This came perfectly after the Great War.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And I'll also say this movie is quite funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. I know the themes are, like, the masculinity themes are outdated, but I actually enjoyed the love story in this movie because I found it ridiculous.
The first half of this movie is very funny.
Yes. Yeah. And even the second, when they're showing off Kong, it's funny because it just seems ridiculous.
He's just cracking jokes, this guy.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. The action in it is quite wild and entertaining, especially during them in the jungle with Kong. The deaths in this movie are even just fun to watch. Those don't become like really fun until the 90s and stuff when disaster like horror movies become important. But this is a fun one to watch. This is just a joyous film. I don't know why.
Reason not to. I can see where people are coming from.
Views. I wasn't a fan. I was like the tribe thing. I was like, oh, okay, this is dated. This is bad.
But there's tribes people in the Skull Island.
They tried to. I don't know what they were doing with Kong Skull Island because they continue that storyline through the new ones. It's hard.
Those storylines are very
similar. It's so hard to do that line because you're like, Kong needs to have a tribe protecting him, but it's like, well, then you're getting into weird territory there.
Yeah.
Some people are going to turn a blind eye, some not. Comes with the territory.
Does this film deserve to be on the list?
I think 100% deserves to be on the list.
It actually went up two spots. Is it in the right spot?
Yes. Right now, I could see it even going, I don't know, it depends further down the track, but I can say it's safely right now in the right spot.
There was a really good digital release when they released this movie in 2005.
Mm.
It'd be great to get that copy.
Mm.
There was also a director's commentary with a noted critic at the time.
Yep.
And also they had some interviews with Bay Ray. Mm. So that would be a really good digital copy to get. Peter Jackson helped in
digitizing. Because he would have also taken care of it.
Would you watch this movie again?
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
100%.
Rating for this one. I think it's a classic banger.
Yeah, I was thinking banger. I don't know. There's just something stopping it from all-time classic. I think maybe it's just... Oh, for me, every time, does not matter which version of the monkey movie, every time we're in the jungle, after a while, I get bored. I fall asleep. I get tired.
I actually like them.
I love the start. I love the ending, but when I'm in the I like the ending. I'm having.
I like the jungle bits.
I like
love the Kong versus Rex. I love the Kong versus.
Oh no! Serpent. It's I love fun.
The Kong versus pterodactyl.
When Kong is fighting the, but after he fights so many, I'm like, okay, I've seen him fight, guys.
Yeah,
I'm ready to call it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Kong in New York.
I like Kong in New York. I like Kong in New York just like for the chain bit.
Yeah.
Because it's funny.
That's true. That is it for today's show. King Kong, banger.
Banger.
Next week on the channel, movie number 40. And it is The Hills Are Alive with the...
Sound of Music.
Huge. Hannah, you're going to do all that one.
Yep.
I'm just going to sit back and just listen to you.
Maria.
About Rodgers and Hammerstein's classic
star. Man, Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yep. One of my favorite themes in that movie. Hannah.
Yeah, love.
Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Talk about
movies.
Movies.
It's what we do here.
We do talk about movies. Any movie that's been released in cinemas. That should be good stuff. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Leave a comment down below what your thoughts are. Warm King Kong 1933. And until we meet again, it's Long Live Cinema, and it's bye for now.
Bye.